I would like to take a moment and mention a pressing issue we are seeing in our modern world. And that is tech use and tech light. The data are impressive and concerning on isolated wavelengths of light, especially shorter wavelengths, which is blue light. For those that don't know, we have chromophores, which are special proteins that absorbs specific wavelengths of light. For blue light, the light that is LED light and tech light, that protein is called melanopsin. Melanopsin is responsible for our circadian biology, physiology and cell functioning, hormone regulation, and even a connection to an area huge for mood. A consideration we should include is this protein was not even discovered until 1998. It seems important for us to understand how our biology uses the different wavelengths of light for various aspects of our biology. This blue light chromophore is our master controller, our master clock. Remember, circadian rhythm is a two-part process, two independent parts, light and dark. For a quick reference, see the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. But for now, I have something exciting. I want to introduce a product unlike any other product available. A highlight is the product from Daylight Computer Company created their product based on these factors. The Daylight Computer is completely blue light free. It has no flicker. Short wavelength flicker is extremely harmful for our eyes and downstream biology. Light flicker is constantly turning our central nervous system on and off. Essentially, it is like going to a light switch and repeatedly turning it on and off. The problem is, blue light and LED light does this. And it is so rapid, you cannot even perceive this in real time. The Daylight Computer is the lowest stimulation and foremost for sensory-sensitive users. It is no question that the alternative product, especially when used at night, do not address or consider this in their product. It is so toxic to human biology. Big tech corporations have patents on how their short wavelength implicate the human nervous system. And a bonus, despite Daylight Computer not having backlight, it is very functional for outdoor use. And of course, increased sunlight is always preferred. I am happy to offer a discount for the Daylight Computer. You can use the code AUTISM for a $25 off coupon. Again, use the code AUTISM and the discount code for $25 off. See the link in the show notes to Daylight Computer Company, or just give it a quick search in your internet browser. Use the code AUTISM for $25 off. For today's episode, we will cover how the central nervous system is developed. We will cover parts of embryogenesis. So we will cover developmental parts of the peripheral and enteric nervous system as well. All three, the central, peripheral, and enteric nervous system, are crucial for understanding the autistic phenotype. We will cover how the living organism is developed from the neural tube the crest, and neurulation, neural epithelial cells, and so forth. The purpose is to cover these early phases of brain, spine, and body development. We will cover this in two episodes because I want to get to more details on why the mesencephalon does not evolve into larger biology like the other cell types. Neurulation is a very fascinating stage that happens in early development. It starts with the formation of the neural plate, a flat sheet of ectodermal cells on the embryo's dorsal surface. This typically kicks off around about the third week of human embryonic development. And neurulation can be broken down into two main phases, primary and secondary. For the primary phase, there's a neural plate formation. And then it begins to take shape and it folds. It folds inward. And the fold eventually meets and fuses at the top. And this creates a hollow tube. This is the neural tube. And this closure begins near the middle of the embryonic stage, typically within 22 to 28 days of the development. Now, once this is fused, the neural tube, it will detach from the surface and then close in order to form the skin. So this front end of the tube will eventually make the brain, while the rest of the tube creates the spinal cord. So what's fascinating here, because we've covered this in many episodes, at this point, also the peripheral nervous system is being developed and the facial cartilage. And here's the part, pigment cells. Pigment cells are already on the scene. The secondary neurulation, and this happens at the lower part, the caudal part, the tail end of the spinal cord, and cells clump together, the mesoderm clump, and this will create the rest of the spinal cord. So why this matters is neurulation sets the stage for the entire central nervous system. Major defects here, if that tube doesn't close, is spinal bifida. Not necessarily our topic, but our topic is also crucial here because this closure will determine how the brain development occurs. At each stage, it's important for the process to complete. A region of interest here already is folic acid is very important. And you know, if you're paying attention to autism research, folic acid, vitamin B9, is heavily researched. In fact, Richard Fry was on talking about leucovorin and his research assistant, Nicole Rincon. They've both talked about folic acid in quite detail. In addition to the folic acid, there's a region of interest here called sonic hedgehog. Sonic hedgehog, not Sonic the Hedgehog. We will get into more of that later. But the vitamin B9, the folic acid, this is crucial during pregnancy for many reasons. One reason is it supports DNA synthesis and cell division. Huge for the developing living organism. This is key for the rapid growth of the neural tube. And if the folic acid is off, it will impact how the brain is developed, too low or too high. The folic acid here can affect how the neural progenitor cells divide, migrate, or connect. Huge for autism. If you followed along with the podcast or even autism research does a pretty good job here of the folate metabolism. There is a popular enzyme here, MTHFR. It's almost like motherfucker gene. It's methylene, tetrahydrofolate, reductase. Remember, enzymes end in ace, A-C-E. Again, it's methylene, tetrahydrofolate, reductase. This gene helps convert folate into a form that the body can use. And if it's not working, the folate metabolism is abnormal, and this will implicate the neurulation and the brain development. And that's what the concern is, the DNA methylation. That's huge for folate. And remember a previous episode when we talked about methionine gives a donor called SAM, S-A-M, to folate for this DNA methylation. Folate's role here is not just the neural tube and this neurulation. It's also involved in neurotransmitter synthesis, things like serotonin and dopamine, those neuromodulators, I should say, and the epigenetic regulation. This turns off and on genes. This is huge in autism. So in addition, there's a neural crest, and these cells, they peel off during the neurulation and begin to form the enteric nervous system, one of the most common comorbid problems for the autistic phenotype. This is huge. And this area, this timeline that we're talking about, is a huge region of interest. So with the neurulation, the formation will begin four different cell types. These four cell types are neuroepithelial cells, neural crest cells, surface ectoderm cells, and mesodermal cells. First, the neuroepithelial cells will break into four additional cell types. And this is going to be part of episode 2 of this little back-to-back series. However, for now, the neuroepithelial cells, and this is the process of the neural plate folding into the neural groove, and then the neural tube. We've already talked about this. So once this tube closes and these cells form, those progenitors of the neurons and glia cells. So this is huge here because we're talking about neurons and certain glia cells, like astrocytes. Remember the internal calculator with the norepinephrine from the locus coeruleus and the astrocytes. And we're also talking about oligodendrocytes here, huge for myelination. This is huge for the central nervous system. And the neural crest cells, these cells emerge from the edges of the neural folds. And this begins critical tissues here for the peripheral neurons, like sensory and automatic ganglia, okay, which is huge for the body and movements. Also here are Schwann cells, which are a further insulated myelination type of cell. And the facial cartilage and bone, the adrenal medulla cells, huge for our stress response and our get up and go. And a huge part here, a huge highlight right now, melanocytes. This is huge. This is how the brain and body are connected. Remember the melanocytes and the conversations about POMC. Remember the links to Dr. Jack Cruz and his Patreons from previous show notes. A third type are the surface ectoderm cells. And this is the skin layer. This is the surface of the nervous systems. The skin, hair, nails, and even some sweat glands. The fourth type is the mesodermal cells, which is where we could talk about the sonic hedgehog. But collectively, the mesoderm signals to the ectoderm, and it thickens into the neuroepithelial cells that form the plate. This collection that I discovered, we are beginning to make the central nervous system. And as you learned, some of the peripheral and enteric nervous system. This is where it's all connected. Our brain and body are connected. And now, if you think about autism and all of those comorbid, XYZ comorbid problems, like the GI problems, and the muscle problems, or any type of apraxia, the brain and body. Why is this not a region of interest for us? There are implications here. Everything is telling me this is a region of interest here, this little timeline that we're talking about. Because, remember the domino analogy. If the early processes, if the early dominoes are off, all of the dominoes downstream are going to be off. The process cannot continue properly. So why the neuroepithelial cells? Why this area? Why this timeline? Well, with autism, it's not hard to find problems with cells dividing and migrating. So the neuroepithelial cells are huge for proliferation, and they divide symmetrically to make more of themselves, or asymmetrically to produce more neurons and glia cells. And whenever this balance is off, there's too many neurons maybe, or too few neurons, or too many glia, too few glia. And this is huge in autism research, and it's already established. If you think about the episode when we covered the medial prefrontal cortex, and this is huge. The medial prefrontal cortex is a huge area for providing the living organism with adaptive tools. How's the organism, the living organism, going to respond in the environment to that stimuli? The medial prefrontal cortex kind of leads the way. Remember that in the Autism and Adaptive Responses episode. And remember the episode on autism in the womb, when we covered this. UC San Diego actually does a pretty good job of this. There's too many cells in the areas of the medial prefrontal cortex. So, in addition to the proliferation and creating more cells, the migration and connectivity problems, this is very much aligned and very researched. The data are very impressive here for autism. Migration and connectivity. Neuroepithelial cells give rise to radial glia. And these are helping cells. They act as scaffolds for the newborn neurons when we're proliferating and differentiating. Remember, cells should migrate to similar cells. Friends, flocked to one another. And they use these scaffolding radial glia to migrate to similar areas and for the long range downstream connections, huge in autism. So then let's talk about the signaling, these connections. And this is huge here, the sonic hedgehog. Huge for the differentiation and the migration. And two other areas, huge here, huge in autism research, is P10. We've covered P10, probably episodes 3, 4, and or 5. And SHANK 3, similar, episodes 3, 4, and or 5. But P10 here is huge. P10 is phosphatase and tensin. Why does it matter for autism? Well, P10 is a master regulator of cell growth, division, and survival. It's huge for tumors and cancer and the enlargement, brain enlargement, heavily seen in autism. It balances these factors. It makes sure the process and our biology here is within normal ranges. If you think about P10's role with mTOR pathway as well, mTOR is huge. Remember the episode on Dr. Richard Fry and another episode that I covered, mTOR complex 1, is a region of interest and a way to rescue the autistic phenotype. Simply put, mTOR regulates cell metabolism, and it is a region of interest for aging and longevity science. So some key roles of P10 outside of that: cell size and growth. So too little P10 will equal bigger cells and an abnormal protein synthesis. So if you think about the big brain, how autistics will typically have a bigger brain, eventually they come back down to size, to normal size, but the children, and even through the womb, they have an enlarged brain. P10 is a huge region of interest for this. P10 also regulates synapses formation and the plasticity, how neurons connect and adapt and change through experience, neuroplasticity. This is very huge region of interest for autism. This is all happening early on in this neurulation part, this embryogenesis. Already, we know there are implications here. And if you think about autism and the problems with the synapses and that plasticity, P10 works hand in hand with AKT for signaling at the synapses level and balancing, are you ready? Balancing excitation, inhibition, a very common theme with the podcast for explaining implications. Remember the basal ganglia as well. Remember the substantia nigra and how it sends excitation dopamine, D1-like, DR1 and DR5 for excitation, and inhibitory dopamine, D2-like dopamine, DR2, 3, and 4. We are going to cover this in great detail again, because the substantia nigra is in, guess where? The mesencephalon. This is very critical. But for the P10, with the migration, it's a huge problem for the migration. And cell metabolism, huge for autism. It's linking the cellular energy. It's a problem with the cell energy. Remember the two episodes on the mitochondria, the solo episode, and the one with Dr. Richard Fry. And lastly, because this is more than on the P10 than I anticipated, P10 helps regulate the enteric neurons. So the P10 and SHANK3 are huge for this neuroepithelial signaling sensitivity. And sometimes we've used postmortem studies. We're going to do that again right now. Postmortem studies of autistic brains show signs of early neural overproliferation, so more neurons in the cortex. And this might start to understand why the neuroepithelial cells here are a region of interest. There's a huge timing component here with the neuroepithelial and the folate metabolism and the P10 and SHANK3 and Sonic Hedgehog. All of these things rely on critical timing. All of these factors must be in sync. We're always talking about timing and cell growth with autism. Losing energy or having a lack of energy. And this is why, this is the area, this is the time. This can cause the brain that's structurally sound, that has no problems, become wired differently. So we are talking about those hypo and hyper connectivities of the brain, even if the overall size is not macroencephalon. We can still have problems here because of these connections that are abnormal. This sounds like autism. And these factors are also huge for the peripheral nervous system. So what does this mean? How does the environment influence this? of the embryogenesis and these neurulations and neuroepithelial cells and so forth that we are discussing. The environment provides context and will indicate how the mother and this womb and the embryogenesis respond. Neuroepithelial cells and environmental sensitivity, it's a very sensitive process here. If you think about how the environment has changed, I've said this so many times, how the environment of the mother has changed since autism was developed. Remember the mothers of the Kanner kids. I cannot overstate that. I cannot overstate what the mothers of the Kanner kids looked like. And think about the environment of the mothers now. The mothers will just work up until almost birth indoors. Maybe they are office jobs or school teachers or they work in factories. Doesn't matter. They are all indoors. This is huge for the developing central nervous system, the peripheral nervous system, and the enteric nervous systems. I cannot overstate this. So what about these new environments? Let's talk about the artificial light story and circadian disruption. Humans, before the artificial light and electricity, humans didn't have a problem here and there was no autism. But the impact on pregnancy, the pregnant mother's circadian rhythm influences her hormones. Things like melatonin and cortisol. Remember the early development of the adrenal medulla cells. This area comes on fast for the living organism. And remember how fast the melanocytes are on scene. This is connecting the brain and body. These little developing living organisms in this time frame with the neurulation, the neuroepithelial cells, and the loss of energy here that are usually maintained for the developing organism. Think about that disrupted circadian rhythm and how a lack of sun, the sunlight, and that power, the full spectrum, and the lux, the amount of energy from the photons, the electromagnetic strip. Remember me asking repeatedly over the last 6 weeks, what do you think light is? And is there a difference between the full sunlight spectrum and isolated artificial light wavelengths? And who is going to ask the question? What does this look like? What is happening here? When sunlight hits skin and through the eyes of the pregnant mother versus the artificial light. And what is the environment of the mother now from 1930s, from the mothers of the Kanner kids all the way to 2025? And what does the rates of autism look like after we have switched our environment? Why do people overlook this? Why do they make it so complicated? When nothing I've said, we've covered today, is complicated. Cells proliferate, and they differentiate, and they migrate, and cells are developed, and the mitochondria are environmental signals. They need two things. Oxygen and electrons. How does that look like now in an indoor modern world? What does that look like for the living organism, especially in a time where it's so sensitive and the central nervous system, and the peripheral nervous system, and the enteric nervous system are being developed? And show me one autistic example where the autistic does not have additional comorbid problems with the peripheral nervous system or the enteric nervous system, I will beg to offer, I suggest that every autistic person has an implication to the central nervous system, which is the easy one. It's autism at its core is a problem at the central nervous system, but show me one autistic that doesn't have a problem with the central nervous system, the enteric nervous system, and the peripheral nervous system, all three in one.
So let's look at the neuroepithelial studies. This timeline here, for the circadian biology, there are animal studies that back this. This prenatal light shifts alter brain development in animal studies. In human data, it's not so direct. We won't go here, but we know from studies from UC San Diego and the studies with the machine learning from Dr. Ben Ari that came on, autism is in the womb. It's not difficult here to predict autism in the womb anymore. Downstream of this, with the development of the autistic, maybe the child or young adult even, there are so many problems with migration. The data are so impressive here. Maybe there's a hyperconnection, and maybe some areas are hypoconnected. When do you think this occurs? In neurulation, and remember the domino example, neuroepithelial cells, this is the foundation. This is where differentiation and migration is off. Everything, the whole blueprint of the developing living organism with the central nervous system and the enteric and peripheral nervous systems are going to be off. With autism, there are many mismatches. There are many areas of the brain or the peripheral problems with motor control and the GI problems in the enteric nervous system. There are so many problems here. With autism, the hyper and hypo connections. Let's talk about this with the over differentiation, the problems with differentiation here during this timeline. The neuroepithelial cells in the neural tube, the dorsal region of the neural tube. This is the future cortex for the living organism. Okay, this is very deep, but this differentiation and these neurons are implicated here around week 6. The cortical plate has extra neurons and spots for the temporal lobe. This is vast for autism. The over-differentiation will have overpopulated local circuits forming dense, hyperconnected networks in childhood. What this looks like for the autistic phenotype is this. Hypersensitivity to sounds is what this means. Remember the episodes on sensory processing. Right here is when this is developed. So hypoconnections from the migration, failure. So when the neural tube closes at around day 26, there's stress from the neuroepithelial cells, and they produce too few radial glia, and it's misaligned. Neurons meant for the frontal cortex get stuck in deeper layers and migrate to wrong spots. By month 3, the prefrontal cortex lacks proper connections. In addition, the parietal cortex, where sensory integration occurs, and the cortex here in the parietal kind of orchestrate downstream behaviors based off of this. In autistic children, autistic phenotypes of all ages, they lack the social ability. They miss these social cues. So what happens with the neuroepithelial cells in the ventral tube And this is where I want to stop, because the ventral tube will eventually make the brainstem, the mesencephalon. And this problem here with the autistic phenotype and the developing embryogenesis, because folate is here. I don't want to talk about folate too much next time, but for now, since we've mentioned folate, this shortage of neuron output will occur, and these dorsal cells, this overproliferation, implicating this brainstem area, this automatic area that the living organism uses to bias our attention. Remember, the very first thing that Donald Triplett's father, the first child in the Kanner paper, Donald Triplett, his father, wrote over 30 pages documenting Donald's abnormal kind of social withdrawn behavior. And the first thing that Donald Triplett said, and I'm reading this directly from the Cantor paper right now, he seems to be self-satisfied. He has no apparent affection when petted. He does not observe the fact that anyone comes or goes and never seems glad to see father or mother or any playmate. He seems almost to draw into his shell and live within himself. Remember, one of my biggest takeaways here with the whole podcast to explain the autistic phenotype. The biology that gives us autism allows us to be comfortable within ourselves. It is no question. It is undisputed. It's not even a debate. You can't even debate it. That the autistic phenotype enjoys being within themselves, these dreamlike states. The outside world is uninteresting. Why I say that is the biology creates us to be more alone, withdrawn from society, withdrawn from the environment. And I'm telling you, this is occurring from this early embryogenesis period. Something is causing us to be abnormal, and a large part is the migration problems. What is causing the migration problems during embryogenesis and all the way through the womb as the central nervous system is being developed? If you're listening to the podcast, listening to the episode, please feel free to leave a review or rating. In podcasting, reviews, ratings, and downloads are huge. In Apple Podcasts, we have 5 stars. Nothing but 5 stars, so I very much appreciate that. Please feel free to leave more. I would love your feedback. You can contact me on X at RPS47586. We can have conversations about autism. I'm always open and willing to have conversations about autism. I am telling you, autism is the love of my life. But remember what we just covered and how that should be easier to understand for you. You can check out the YouTube page for all the full-length videos and shorts and clips. You can check out the Hop link for links to all of the podcasts across different platforms. You can email me, info.fromthespectrum@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to From the Spectrum Podcast.